Hey, y'all. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A in the, whatever. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while, and I'm not even looking at anything. I'm just, like, going off the top of my head.
I'll help you out.
From okay.
Prairie Studios, all that stuff. You know, what's up, everybody? Pipcot license. It's fine. This is a podcast. We can do whatever we want. Hey, everybody. It's the Freedom Fiends. We're back.
Yes.
And who is that? It's Diana. Oh, my God. Diana, how are you? It's been so long.
Hello.
What's going on?
Hi.
This is Jeremy.
Oh.
What's up, everybody?
I know. So we're just like going right ahead without trying to do a decent introduction.
No, that was great. That was wonderful. Our audience loves us. They expect these kind of shenanigans. Come on.
Yeah.
We actually
I mean, I was sitting here like thinking, "Oh, wow, I remember the introduction." Like I remembered it. I remembered everything. And then for some reason I start actually saying it and I can't do it. It just doesn't want to come out. So, I'm not sure why.
That's all right. You're out of practice.
Anyway.
It's been a while. So, I've been trying to get you to record one of these forever at this point.
I've been extremely sickly now for like since the beginning of the year. I've been sick, basically. Yeah. And I mean, I was well for a little while in between, but this is the first time I've actually really felt well. I mean, I felt well for a few days, but my voice, I'm not sure we can count on my voice lasting through the whole show in a decent manner, but we'll see.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. It tends to start going and sounding a little bit froggish after I've been talking for a little while, but we'll see.
We'll see how it goes. We'll make things more entertaining. All right. Well, yeah. So anyway, it's good to have you back. I mean, it's been, besides trying to get set this recording up, I mean, it's been forever since you did a show anyway. I mean, even before we went off the air, well, not off the air, we're still on the air. What am I saying? Before we stopped doing the live shows, I mean, it's been a while. And
Locus Aurelius.
What are you? There you go. Phrases are now coming back to you in bits and pieces.
Rejuvenative radio waves.
Better late than never. It's all right.
Decalcify your pineal gland.
Oh, that's one of those random ones that I never used to. I had to think about that for a second. Like, where's that coming from? Like, oh, wait a minute. I remember that on the cheat sheet I used to have.
I think I made that up.
It was there somewhere, I think. I don't know. Who knows?
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty
sure. Somebody said that?
I'm pretty sure, okay. Yeah. I had a list. At one point, I had a list of Fiends intros that was that Michael had sent to me. There was like six or seven of them on there for the hour one intro. And then there was just the standard hour two intro. And I know like one of them was Randy's. I think one of them was Lou's. And I don't know who else came up with it. Like there was a bunch of other ones mixed in there. And then I think eventually I did my own, which my sit and stay one, which I retired after I closed the business the first time. And then I quasi brought it back on the last show we did.
Okay. So I didn't make up decalcify your pineal gland. I thought I did.
You know, maybe you did. And maybe that's how I got put in there. Who knows? I don't remember.
I've never said it before on the show.
Well, okay. Whatever. Anyway. So what have you been up to besides being sick for all these months?
Galactic Prairie Studios.
Okay. We got the hint. I think people know where we are.
What have I been up to? My life has been pretty mundane, you could say. Just been working, not really doing a whole lot. Basically, being sick and trying to get well has been the focus of my life since the beginning of the year.
Wow.
That's rough. And I mean, it's just been two really bad upper respiratory infections. So,
Yeah, those are no fun.
Yeah. And they, I don't know, for whatever reason, they tend to really go into my chest pretty badly. And I spend, I don't know, like days coughing my head off and coughing till I think I'm going to throw up and coughing until I think I'm going to burst an aneurysm. Yeah, just pretty bad. And yeah, it's just a relief when it's over with, because it's like, I, you know, honestly, I don't know how people live with things like, you know, really bad asthma or chronic bronchitis or emphysema, you know, any type of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's like, I just don't know how you people do it, because like three weeks, not very comfortably,
from what I've witnessed, but
no, definitely not. It couldn't possibly be, because 3 weeks of living with a cough like that is just, I don't know, it's hell. Bottom line.
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad you're at least feeling.
And I guess maybe I'm not extremely tolerant of discomfort. So. I'm a little bit of a baby when it comes to being sick.
You're a little bit on the puss-puss side.
I'm a little bit on the puss-puss side, just a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can be sometimes. For the most part, I suffer through everything. But there are times where I can end up, you know, if I get hit with something really bad, I've been told, apparently, I'm not a very fun patient because I'm whiny.
Well, you know, I mean, before I moved to Colorado, I don't know why, but since I moved to Colorado, everything that I've gotten here, you know, whether it's like upper respiratory or it's, you know, a GI thing or whatever, it has just been, I don't know, like so much worse than anything I've gotten before. I don't know. I mean, I think it may have something to do more with just, I don't know, the air, perhaps. I don't know. You know, you would think that with the that could be like the drier air. You would think would be better for any type of upper respiratory thing, but I don't know. I feel like humidity is potentially better for that, because I mean, what they tell you is whenever you get something like that, a bad cough or, you know, a sinus thing or whatever, that you should get a
humidifier.
At first
I was like, oh yeah, the dry air. And then as soon as you started to say that, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm thinking, because one of the things I just did today, we were talking a little bit before the show about, you know, my trials and tribulations with my house and if I'm ever going to get out of here. But I was packing some stuff up today. And one of the things I packed up with was a humidifier. So I started with went from the kids' room and I started thinking about that. So as soon as you said that, I'm like, of course, why wouldn't you want it to be humid for your chest and lungs in those situations? It's supposed to help you. So I guess, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there could be a whole bunch of other factors. I mean, has your diet changed since then too? Is your exercise habits, all these things? But yeah, I'm sure that could have an impact. That if it's been since you've been there, and what's it been, 2 years now? Yeah. You've been out there 2 years now? Has it been?
About two and a half.
Okay, yeah.
Which is unbelievable. Like it just seems like yesterday I moved here. So weird.
Yeah, that tends to happen. I find that the older I get, the more that tends to happen. Like, I was thinking that the other day, like, as I'm getting ready to hopefully finally get the heck out of this house, unfortunately not out of New York yet, but at least out of this house, it's been a while, but it's been like 11 years, and it's like, oh, it still does feel like yesterday. It's like, no, man, that was a long time ago. You just have no concept of time anymore. I don't know. Everything's been a blur.
It's so weird. And I mean, you know, there like a lot of the, you know, the ideas of being in the moment, you know, and being present to what's happening in your life right now. I wonder if like actually being able to live that makes time seem to go a little more slowly, because I feel like, you know, I just tend to sort of gloss over everything in my life. I don't necessarily pay attention to where I'm at right now. I'm thinking either about what happened yesterday or what may happen tomorrow. And I wonder if that's what sort of, you know, lends to the perception of time going by really quickly. That if we truly lived in the moment, that it would seem more like time was normal.
Normal, regular.
I don't know.
I think I get what you're saying though, but well, I mean, yeah. I guess that would kind of make sense because the you know, the what I was thinking beforehand is it's, you know, the you people usually say that it's when you're, you know, when you're a kid, time lasts forever, you know, because everything takes mm-hmm. forever. All the weights that you have, you know, waiting for school yeah. to end, waiting for the summer to come, waiting for this, waiting for that. Like it, right. everything takes forever. And then as soon as you become an yeah. adult, everything seems to speed up. And mm-hmm. I could, you know, there's definitely a connection there because for the most part, when you're a kid, kids do tend to live more in the moment. Everything is moment to moment as things come, mm-hmm. you know, and life experiences happening to them.
Yeah.
So maybe that does have something to do with it because, yeah. you know, I'm at the point where I actually try to still focus on what's going on. I mean, lately it's been difficult for me with all the things I have to deal with mm-hmm. and stuff. It's been kind of hard to focus what's in front of me at the time and not have my mind going in 5 million directions, whether it's yesterday, tomorrow, mm-hmm. or 2 weeks from now, you know. But I still do try to get into the moments, but even then everything still and yeah. I may have just psyched myself up for it because I've always just believed that, you know, the whole thing, because once I started to get older and time seemed to start speed up like that, it was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is what was supposed to happen, this is what I was told was going to happen. So I just really haven't questioned it since. But it's interesting, and like I said, it wouldn't, maybe that is the case though, maybe that's because we're not really living in the moment, we're not really experiencing this stuff. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. I don't know.
I talk about it. Yeah, go ahead.
But it's really, really hard. It's so hard. Like, you try to focus on what's going on right now. Like, you know, just focus on your breath, or, you know, what it feels like to be sitting where you're sitting, or, you know, like, I mean, for instance, right now, you know, just, I mean, I guess I'm pretty focused on the moment. You know, I'm not really thinking about, you know, what happened earlier today, or, you know, what might happen tomorrow. I'm pretty focused. Well, I mean,
I'm kidding.
I don't know. Not really. Even just like mentioning it, I mean, it doesn't really seem to, I don't feel like it's leading me anywhere. I still feel pretty present, but it's just really easy when you're sitting around, or like even at work or whatever, just to, I don't know, it's just so easy to let time slip by, you know? And I mean, I think about that as a mother, and today's Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. to everyone. But, wow. You know, I think about that as a mother, and I think about, you know, the moments that I kind of let slip by me when my daughter was a kid, you know, and I really regret that, you know, because I'm a worry wart. Like, I worry. That's just what I do. And it takes tremendous effort to not do that. Because that's what's normal for me is to worry. And I know it doesn't do any good. And I know, you know, at the end of the day, it's really taking away from me and taking away from my life. And so
it may take a lot for you not to worry, but how much is it taking from you to
exactly.
worry? You know, it's yeah. cost benefit analysis. Yeah. The extra work may actually right. be worth it in the end, because it'll be less painful.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, most definitely. You know, and I get that from my mom. Like, my mom was a huge worry wart, and she really thought, I don't know, she was under some like really just crazy delusion that her worry actually did have an impact on outcomes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. She actually thought her worry did something. And I'm like, Mom, no, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And, you know, and I'm aware of that and I know that, but still, you know, I do tend to worry. And, it really does take away from your life, and it certainly doesn't add to it.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it brings up an interesting question for me, which is worse than your mom really believing it and continuing to worry because she believed she had some impact somehow, some way, or somebody like you doing it despite knowing it has no impact?
Right. Yeah, me.
Who's actually worse
it's,
off in
it's
that
worse.
Situation?
Me, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before, you know, the curse of self-awareness.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's yeah. definitely.
Yeah. It's like, I'm well aware of all the self-destructive crap that I do, you know, and I still have a really difficult time not doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's funny. I had a conversation recently with this guy. I don't know if you've heard of him. Anthony Samaroff. He does the Scottish.
Oh yeah.
The Scottish Liberty podcast, and then he wrote that book, Procrastination Annihilation. He's a really interesting guy, and I was actually supposed to meet him because he coincidentally, shortly after I interviewed him for my other show, The Seas of Liberty, he happened to be coming to New York from Scotland just to take a vacation. And I was actually supposed to go pick him up at the airport. We were going to hang out for like a day or two. We were actually going to go crash the New York Libertarian Convention. And unfortunately, like five days before he got here is when I ran into a whole bunch of a new set of problems with the sale of my house and the court case and everything that caused me to, and the bank cutting me off for my credit cards and everything, a whole big mess, which I think I talked about on the show before. But anyway, mm-hmm. It was right around then that that all this happened. So I had to cancel because I couldn't, justify affording driving upstate to pick him up and then going to hang out for a weekend and go in a hotel or something. So yeah. I couldn't do it. But I was talking to him about a bunch of these things, and he kept trying to dissuade me from pointing out that I knew all this stuff because, he's much more a softer approach, kind of like my buddy Danilo Cuellar from Peaceful uh-huh. Anarchism. And it's more like, and it's not that you're stupid or anything. You just don't know these things yet. It's like, no, I kept trying to convince him. I was like, no, man, I've known these things. Like I've been told ever since I was a little kid that I was too smart for my own good. And I never really understood what that meant until, I don't know, maybe like less than a decade ago. I finally started putting all that out together. It's like, oh, now I get it. Like, I know all this. Like, I know all the things, most of the things that I'm doing wrong, how to, even worse, in a lot of situations, I know what I need to do to correct them.
Yeah, there's a saying actually in 12-step programs. I think it's in AA. Self-knowledge availed us nothing.
I should know that too, because I've been through that. Well, I went to those meetings and stuff, so I should know all that stuff. But well, and
so I mean, yeah, we can have all the self-knowledge in the world. We can navel gaze from here to eternity, kind of thing, and ultimately, until we start to take conscious action, toward changing, the way we think and our behaviors and moving toward goals, all that self-knowledge really doesn't do anything, unfortunately. Like, I feel like it does. Like, I've always felt like it does. Like, I've always felt in a way sort of, I've always kind of felt like the most people don't really have a lot of self-awareness.
They just
kind of live their lives. They don't really think about like why they do what they do. And I think a lot about why I do what I do, but what good does that do?
Well,
I guess it's a first step, just having that knowledge or having that self-awareness, but I can't stay there. Like, I can't stay stuck there.
Well, no, that doesn't do good either, obviously. But yeah, it definitely does put you at an advantage over the people, well, in some aspects, and in other aspects, no, because yeah, sure, ignorance is bliss, and it really is in a lot of ways. But in the important self-improvement ways, having that self-knowledge and being aware of these things, it may be a drag sometimes, but overall, if your goal is improvement, then even if it's painful, it is still it's progress. It's a good thing in the end, that type of stuff.
Yeah. You pretty much have to have that to start with. You have to have some self-awareness, certainly, of, your strengths and your weaknesses, and just kind of like why you operate the way that you do. And
So. Or you could, be like me and just keep trying to figure it out along the way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh.
What?
Oh my goodness. Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah. Huge thunderclap.
Oh. Awesome.
Yeah, got a storm coming. Yeah. So I have my windows closed, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah. So.
I hope we don't get droned during a podcast, man. That'd be a bummer.
What? I know, right?
Hope you don't get droned during a podcast. But no,
it could happen.
what was I going to say? Well, you know, I was going to say you were saying earlier that, you know, not unfortunately you haven't been doing much since you've been gone, except being sick and trying to get better. But then you did bring up the fact of what today is. And I've talked about this many a times, you know, I'm anti all of these holidays, including Father's Day, Mother's Day, all of these things, birthdays, you mm-hmm. know, I'm horrible like that.
Hello, friends. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Do you know about Cell 411? Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone that you can get on the Google Play Store and the iPhone Store, wherever you beautiful people get your iPhone apps. Cell 411 allows you to send messages in real time, including video and audio if you want, to friends that you pick ahead of time and set up cells where you can help each other. Could be used for families to help kids not be bullied, so they can call an older sibling or a family friend if they're bullied. Basically, you set up a cell with your friends and family or whoever you want. There's a little wheel on it, and when there's an emergency, you just hit the button of like the appropriate thing, like car broke down, police stop, criminal activity, I'm being pulled over, police interaction, medical emergency, fire, crime in progress, need a ride, ride sharing, anything. You can just call your friends and find them. It sends your GPS coordinates to them and gives turn-by-turn directions so they can get to you as quick as possible. They can also send a message back, yes, I'm coming, and it'll tell how many minutes away they are, or they can say, no, I can't come now. You can stream video and audio to them, which is stored on the Cell 411 servers for a few weeks. So if you get your phone taken away, you still have access to the video that was saved up until the point where your phone was taken away or destroyed. So if bullies, whether they're in uniform or private bullies, steal your phone, whether it's some Antifa or some overly helpful police person who doesn't want to be filmed doing his job for some reason, you'll still have access to this video. So I highly recommend that you get Cell 411. I use it. My wife and I use it. My friends and family use it. Cell 411. Go to getcell411.com or get it on the Google Play Store or iTunes Store. Cell 411, because your friends won't show up and shoot you.
But you did have a good day today, though, right? Because you got to go out.
Yeah.
You got to do some fun stuff I was doing.
Yeah, I went and shot some guns and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Good old freedom.
Went up in the mountains and shot my 38 and also a 22 and a 22 rifle and an AR, a couple of AR-15s and also an AK-47.
Very nice.
Yep. Oh, and a 30-06. Wow. And I think I have a bruise on my shoulder from that one.
That's pretty funny.
So. But it was fun. Yeah, I really enjoy it. I like to pretend that I'm shooting at zombies' heads.
Okay, well, whatever works mm-hmm. for you.
And so it becomes like much more of an imperative that I actually hit my target.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
See, I usually just went for whoever I was mad at the time, you know.
Right.
My father, ex-girlfriend, you know, whatever.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Not that I would ever shoot any of these people in real life.
Right.
No, it's kind of like a punching bag. You know, who do you imagine when you're hitting the punching bag? It's not like I'm really going to hit that person in the face. But, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. if you got to gear yourself up a little bit, you know, everybody's got their go-to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to think that, like, other people, and it sounds like you definitely do have those sorts of fantasies.
No, it's not a fantasy, I would say. But I like the zombie idea. Maybe I'll take that up. Although it's been forever since
I've
been shooting
anyway. I've never really actually considered thinking of a real person that I would like to pretend that is that person. But yeah, I can definitely see that to some degree. Yeah.
It's not like all the time. It's not like, you know, that's not how I know. Shoot. Yeah. You know, just like I said.
Right.
If I'm a little angry when you shoot, or, you know, you get a text message while you're shooting or something, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Of course. So, like I said, I don't go shooting anyway. So if this is all hypothetical, of course. Mm-hmm. These things I discuss here. You know, those darn guns, just like all my paper and hardware wallets, were all in that same boat. Such a shame. You know, real shame. Tragedy. Mm-hmm. Tragedy, really. You know, they all sunk all at once. So, horrible boating accident. Rest in peace. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
Once I relocate, though, maybe I'll get around to purchasing some new firearms. Because that's the one good thing.
Yeah.
If it is Indiana, I still end up in. I mean, that's the plan right now. But who knows when that's actually going to be, when I'm going to be able to get out of here.
Yeah. Hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Hopefully. But either way, if that's where I go, I mean, I will have to deal with some pretty ridiculous drug laws there. But I mean, I deal with insane laws on so many levels here that even ridiculous drug laws don't bother me, because at least the gun laws are good over there. They'll leave me alone. I think I can have pretty much whatever I want over there. I don't think it's a problem. So that's nice. You know, looking forward to that. And then maybe I can go out shooting more often. Actually, now that I think about it, I think the last time I actually went out shooting around here, it was actually, funnily enough, with the Oath Keepers back in the day when I was still. Well, I had actually pretty much given up on them at that point, but I knew they were going out for a shoot one day, and I was just like, "Yeah, let's go." Yeah. So I took Jen. I took Jen out there, and that was actually the sad thing. That was the first time. I mean, this was only a few years ago, so we were already pushing 40 at that point. But that was the first time that poor woman had ever shot a gun, and she grew up in the house with a New York City a cop. He put the fear of guns in her and like refused to let and like wouldn't let her touch a gun.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important, because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Oh my goodness.
To the point where, you know, like, I mean, like any other good Catholic girl that was disciplined like that growing up and also forced into Catholic school, she rebelled in plenty of ways. As soon as she was allowed to or could get or was able to, but the gun thing she never did, and she just never got around to doing it. And it wasn't until me, which I'm sure, of course, because I remember her going back to her parents and saying how excited she was about it. And I could just picture her father's face. Which of course made me happy about how excited she was that she went out and did that. But it's funny you said that it took the 30-06 to finally bruise you. I think she got bruised, although I think she might have picked up my shotgun by mistake, because, you know, I got her a 20, which shouldn't have bruised her. But I think she picked up my 12. I think that was the problem.
Oh. Yeah.
That gave her
I had the opportunity to shoot a 12 gauge today, and I chose not to.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten popped by my own 12 gauge. If you're not set properly, like I've bruised myself up pretty good with that thing. They do give a nice little wallop.
Yeah. But this one didn't even have a stock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It just had like, I don't know what you call it. It just, I mean, you couldn't hold it against your shoulder. You had to hold it out. Just kind of strange. Yeah. But yeah, I was just like, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah.
I'll just play with these over here. But I had never shot a 30-06 before, and I had no idea how bad that would kick. And it definitely punched me pretty hard.
I don't think I've shot one either. I've only done like,
yeah.
I haven't. Yeah, I'm actually woefully under prepped when it comes to that stuff. That's another reason I'm so desperately want to get out of here, because I want to go get myself a whole lot more practice in a hurry. Like I've shot guns throughout my life, but nothing steadily enough to be anywhere near as proficient as I would like to be.
Right.
And it's only been like basic stuff too, because, you know, it's like I think I started on 22s, and then, mm-hmm. you know, Always had shotguns. Yeah,
22 is so fun because it's just like doesn't kick at all. It's almost like shooting a BB gun.
Yeah, that's what I remember that too. That was because that was the first thing I was the first 22. I think was the first gun I was ever handed, and it was my grandfather was. You couldn't really tell, like, visibly if you were looking from the as an outsider, because my grandfather didn't show like excitement or anyway, very visibly. He was a very my one grandfather, very interesting guy he was. But you could tell he was kind of pumped that he was getting one of his grandsons, and because I guess the other one, there was one that was older than me, and then like a step grandson or whether it was older than me too, but I don't think either of them took any interest in shooting guns with him or something. So when he came, you know, was visiting one day, and he had a bunch of his guns with him. And my dad was at first was a little hesitant about letting me shoot them, but you know, I was only like 8 or 9 at the time, I think. But he, you know, cause his dad was there, he quickly was like, oh, all right. Of course my mom was freaking out, but I could tell my grandfather, looking back, you could tell my grandfather was, you know, kind of psyched that I was like, oh yeah, sure. I want to do it with granddad, you know, grandpa, let me teach me that type of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely. The first thing they handed me was a 22. I almost shot my dog, and they're like, yeah, okay, we're not going to do this.
Oh my god!
Yeah, because unfortunately, they handed me the gun to teach me it, the kind of the way that my dad taught me how to ski when I was 4 or 5 years old. And it was either my 4th or 5th birthday that they took me skiing, and my mom was freaking out, of course, the whole time because she thought I was going to get hurt. Same way with the gun, and my dad was kind of just like, "Oh, he'll be fine," and literally just put me on the bunny slope and just pushed me down the mountain, lined me up and just pushed me. He said, all right, go.
Right.
Kind of figure it out. That was kind of like how they did with the gun. They just kind of handed it to me. And they're like, all right, you point it this way and you do this and you shoot. And I was like, all right.
Yeah. The problem with that is that you can actually injure other
Exactly.
They were other people animals or
back
whatever.
Then gun safety I don't think was the most they were like, yeah, you're not gonna do this, because I missed by a good 3 feet, but it was definitely in the direction, and it was like over my dog's head, who was lying. Like I hit the tree behind him. But it was like, yeah, you're not gonna play with guns anymore. You can't do it. You're not ready for this.
Oh man.
But we, like I said, we also didn't grow up in my grandfather had a bunch of guns, you know, because he was a hunter. You know, he did hunting. He had was it beagle? Yeah, I think he used to have beagles. He definitely.
Beagles.
Yeah, like Roxy. Yeah. As his little hunting dogs, and you know, he used to go out all the time and stuff like that. But it wasn't like, you know, we never had a gun in the house with, you know, with my dad or stuff like that. And you know, I think the last time my dad, I mean, now my dad's a big gun guy, you know, after he got, as he got older and then became like, you know, a constitutionalist and a patriot and a 3%er. And he was actually an oath keeper too. I think I've talked about that before. I think he was like one of the first 100 of original oath keepers, like when Stuart Rhodes started the thing. He was big. Like he's out there. He's all, I think he's still, I don't think it's his profile picture anymore, but for the longest time it was. There was a picture of my dad all proud shaking, what's his name? Cliven Bundy. Because my dad was there at the Bundy's at the standoff. My dad was there,
right?
You know, with his buddies on all their guns. You know, like now. So like now they are, but back in the day, I think I mean, unless they had one, and I never saw it. And the way my mom was, I just can't imagine us having one in the house at any point. Because I remember when my grandfather was thinking about as he was getting older and he wasn't going out hunting anymore, he wanted to split, you know, he wanted to give away his guns, and he wanted to give them to his sons, and hopefully they would pass them on to their children. Like, you know, he wanted to give them to my dad so I would get them. And my mom was like, I remember there's like a big battle over this about whether this was going to be allowed. and then of course after I almost shot Tigger, decision was made a little easier that we'd get them, but they'd be stored somewhere else for a while. But aside from that, I don't think my dad had a gun since he was in the Navy, you know. Like,
wow,
it's the last time, you know, he was a gunner in the Navy. Like, maybe it's the last time he was around a gun, I don't know. Up until, you know, like I said, these days. So that wasn't the culture I grew up in. I mean, I grew up in the woods and, you know, the mountains of Pennsylvania, and a couple of my friends had guns, and I went, you know, shot some stuff with them every once in a while, like messing around. But I don't even think, yeah, I was like, I never even went on a hunting trip or anything.
Right.
It's weird. I led such a weird existence up there in Pennsylvania.
Huh.
So many things you think I would have done, I just didn't. And other things people don't think I would have done. I'm like, yeah, I did that. Yeah. But again, that's another one of the reasons I want to get the heck out of here, because I would like that to be different for my girls. I would like my children to learn, which may freak out some people listening. You know, it's
what,
okay
for your girls to learn how to properly handle a firearm.
Well, yeah, because most people just go, "Oh my God, you gotta hand a 6-year-old a gun." It's like, well, yeah, I wish somebody had handed a 6-year-old me a gun, but not just handed it to me and going, "Okay, you point it in this direction and you pull the trigger. We've set everything up else for you. Go."
Like, yeah,
I wish somebody had done, you know, with a little more direction maybe, and maybe, you know, gone through that. And you can
totally do that with your girls.
Yeah, I would like to. And
yeah. Yeah.
You know, thankfully, again, because of the wonderful experience Jen had when I took her out shooting, she's all for it, so I don't have to deal with that. You know, I don't have to deal with the worried. I mean, she's a worried mother like any other good mother, but, you know, like not like the over crazy mother. Be like, no, you can't do that. Like, she's kind of like,
right.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Well,
maybe not right now, but like, yeah, it's sometime soon, hopefully. You know,
what's kind of, I guess, shocking to me. I mean, I've never been afraid of guns. Like, I've never, you know, even throughout any of all of my different political iterations, I've never like been afraid of guns. And it seems like so many people kind of are afraid of guns, which I don't know. I just find that, I don't know, astonishing.
Well,
but it's like that the gun is not going to just jump up and shoot you.
Yeah, but
it's a tool like anything else.
Well, yeah, but it gets talked about a lot, the fact that there's something. Well, the number used to get floated around was 300 million. I've seen it up as closer to 400 million now, which may very well be possible. I don't know. But somewhere between 300 and 400 million guns in the United States in the hands of private citizens. You know, that's the claim that a lot of, guns rights people make when they try to say, listen, you can't do anything about it. And they're right. If that number figure is correct, then yeah, there's absolutely nothing you can do. Although there's as we've talked about plenty of times on the show, there's really nothing you can do anyway, because things like the ghost gunner exists. Like, you can't get rid of guns. You can't prohibit these things out of existence. There's a lot of them out there, but they're not in that, just because there's that many, they're in the hands of not a small number of people, but not a huge number of people either. So there's still plenty of people out there that haven't, like people like me, who even though there wasn't necessarily a fear, like my mom might have had like a fear of guns, but like there wasn't like this over irrational fear in the house of guns. They weren't in our house, but it wasn't like, they're evil, you must stay away. But so there's plenty of people that even just like that, you just grow up like that. You're not around them. You've never shot one.
Right.
And you've never had the experience.
But that doesn't mean doesn't necessarily, like, does it translate to you having a fear?
Well, no, hold on. I wasn't finished.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
But if you have no experience, and then you are also somebody who gets your information, say, from the news, then you are going to grow this irrational fear. Yeah. It's quite possible. It's quite easy to do that. That's the reason. You know, I think that's why it happens, because you see it all the time when people. A lot of times there's, it doesn't get reported as much. Although if you're somebody who follows the more independent media, then you will see stories like this all the time when people, are victims of something, and they'll come out and still say, this happened to me, but I still don't think everybody should be punished and guns should be taken away. It's usually the people that are on the periphery that come out, and all the crazy people that come out and say, you need to take all the guns away and stuff like that. But plenty of times sometimes victims and stuff, you know, they'll come out and say, no, you know, I was attacked, but I still don't want people to have their guns taken away. Like, that's insane. Like,
right.
I want this person mm-hmm. punished who did this to me,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. So it, like I said, it really depends on the upbringing you had, but you didn't have to necessarily be brought up to fear guns. You could definitely be programmed to fear guns at this mm-hmm. point. If you, like I said, if you're one of those people who that's where you get your information from, I could see it quite easily for people to have that happen, because you just buy the BS that they put out there about how dangerous these things are, how many people die, even though they conflate all these numbers together.
Right.
You know, they can play suicides. Yeah. Although I used to think that was the worst thing, the fact that whenever they throw out those numbers about how many gun deaths there are, the fact that they sneak suicides in the, like, I used to think that was one of the lowest things they could do. And then I found what they were doing with the school shootings, where they stick anybody who gets shot on or near enough to a school property, even if it's a suicide attempt. Those have been integrated into a lot of these lists that get pushed around and called school shootings. And that's why there's been crazy numbers that were thrown around during the last one, Parkland. That was right last November, was that?
Oh yeah, in Florida.
Yeah, uh-huh. Was that November, December?
I think there may have been like one since then, or one or two since then.
Yeah,
honestly.
But when that one happened. Number
then there was a school stabbing in China. I don't have the actual article for that. Do you heard about that, or you read about that, correct?
Oh yeah.
Like this person stabbed a bunch of people and like killed a couple with a knife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, see, although it's actually weird, because coincidentally, I remember the last time, I think it might have been around Sandy Hook, maybe, that was the time that there was another story that came out of China about a stabbing spree on a subway, which to me, as you were saying that, I was like, wait a minute, that's actually really coincidental that happened both times. Maybe that's mm-hmm. just the counter narrative that's being pushed. That's not true either. Who knows? But at least when it comes to, you know, these, like I said, these things happen, and I don't know. It's, people buy into this stuff, because that's the narrative that's forced into it. And if you're not paying.
Well, the bottom line is that if you have an individual that wants to kill a bunch of people, they're going to figure out a way to do it, regardless of whether they have access to firearms or not. They're going to do it. They're going to figure out a way to do it. So, yeah. I mean, if the idea of outlawing or like hyper-regulating firearms, you think is going to actually reduce the number of violence, or the amount of violence that's perpetrated by people that want to perpetrate violence, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Oh, of course not.
So, yeah, I mean and certainly, I mean, it's like if you want to set these laws, only so-called law-abiding citizens are going to follow these laws. They're going to, like, other people are going to figure out a way around the laws to do what they want to do.
Well, yeah.
Harm. You know, if that's what they want to do, that's what they're going to do. It doesn't matter.
Well, of course.
I mean, the
greatest example for that specific instance here in the good old USSA is of course, Chicago, because, you know, say, OK, stricter gun laws, stricter this. It's like, OK, Chicago has Illinois in general, but Chicago even more so has the strictest, you know, some of the strictest gun laws in the country. And, you know, gun deaths, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Highest all over, Chicago, murders all over the place. People killing each other with guns. And, you know, I was talking about stories that that are out there that run counter to these narratives. I'm pretty sure I heard one very recently, within the past couple of weeks, that there was actually that people were starting to throw out there a bunch, because it runs totally counter to the narrative that Australia, because, you know, Australia got rid of all the guns and nobody's getting killed out there. I think there was a recent big, like, you know, mass killing of six or more people with a gun in Australia. It's like, wait a minute, that's not supposed to happen at all out there. How does that work? But of course, like I mentioned earlier, I mean, prohibitions in any sense never work. That's been proven out time and time and time and time. Like, you can't, they don't work. You can't prohibit these certain activities you could try to prohibit, but like, people getting certain items, people getting things like that they want to, whether they want to use for protection or even if they want to use it against somebody or things they want to put in their own body, like when it comes to drugs and all things, none of these things, it never works. Because as soon as you prohibit something, it makes a certain percentage of the population want it even more. That's just like, you know, that's part of human nature. A lot of people, children more so, but a lot of people who haven't grown up fully, I mean, I'm one of those people, you know, we were talking about earlier about being, the self-awareness and all that stuff. I'm aware of this. At least I'm aware of it.
I'm extremely immature.
I can admit it. I've accepted it. Everybody else should too. You know, just let's move on. now I forgot where I was going with that. Gosh darn it. I sidetracked myself. But the whole prohibition thing. Yeah, it doesn't work. It's never going to work. People are going to want to do these things. And like, oh, that's why I say a certain percentage of the population. Yeah, it makes people want to do it more because you tell them you can't. And, you know, for whatever reason, and especially with things like when you're talking about guns, with things like the Ghost Gunner, and even before the Ghost Gunner, I mean, I had friends who had machines that were like the Ghost Gunner that existed before the Ghost Gunner with Cody Wilson and Defense Distributed, you know, before that became, you know, before they were actually doing that and then doing the 3D printed stuff and then putting the plans for those. Was the Liberator? That was the first one, right? I think the first gun they put out. The really weird looking one shot. That everybody had a conniption fit when they released those plans on the internet. It's like, here you go.
Right.
Here, world. Take these and do that what you will. You know, people like conniption fit, but it's like, yeah, it's, you know, people are going to find a way, of course. So instead of trying to, you know, punish people for wanting to have it, you know, doesn't it make more sense just to not fear them and be more, you know, and learn how to be more safe with them? And, you know, maybe for somebody who doesn't have one, maybe consider getting one. And then that way you'd be less of a target for other people.
Yeah.
Which means you'd have less to fear. I don't know. It seems like a win-win to me. I don't know. Again, of course, I'm speaking for anybody who lives outside of horrible places like New Yorkistan, like myself, because, you know, we can't have guns here, you know, and I wouldn't want to recommend anybody do anything to break the law in that regard.
Of course not.
Just funny, because I think I encourage people to break the law in every other regard. Probably makes me either a hypocrite or very confused. Oh, yeah. Good old New Yorkistan. Anyway. So go out and shoot. That's my recommendation. I think everybody should do that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So what was, there was something else we were going to talk about tonight that you brought up earlier. Something about a dog on a plane, I think, that.
Oh, yeah. all right. So this happened a couple of months ago, back in March. And I didn't send you an article. There were a few articles that came out and it was on the news pretty heavily, maybe for a couple of days.
I don't
necessarily think that people really paid attention. I mentioned it to a few people and, you know, no one knew what I was talking about, but, on a United Airlines flight, this was a couple of months ago, a family, a mother, her two kids and her dog, I'm not sure where they were flying from and to, but apparently it was about a 3-hour flight. They had a little French bulldog puppy and, his name was Coquito. So you could probably do like a hashtag Coquito on Twitter and come across a few things, but, so apparently, and right in front of me, I don't have all the information about it. And I'm not sure that anybody has all the information about it, but apparently the mother had the puppy in a carrier under the seat in front of her, which is where you're supposed to have them, but didn't have it maybe all the way under. And a flight attendant on that flight was coming by, you know, how as they do, they check and see if you have things, you know, like in their proper places, as you know, when they're getting ready to take off. And I guess maybe it was sticking out a little bit. The flight attendant said, we're going to have to put that in the overhead bin. And according to the owner of the dog, the mother of the two kids and I guess the dog mom, said, no, dog there's mom. A dog. Yeah, there's a dog in there. Yeah, you know, we can't do that. And the flight attendant was, I don't know. I mean, here's my thinking. My thinking is that the flight attendant did not understand what the woman was saying. Because, I mean, it is, I think it's pretty clear policy that animals do not go in the overhead bin.
Yeah, I haven't actually checked any policy, but that would seem to be mm-hmm. the case.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear policy. And I think that any, like semi-intelligent human would know that that's probably not the place for an animal. But the flight attendant insisted that this item needed to go into the overhead bin. Now, my question is, okay, so it's possible. I mean, I have like several opinions about this whole incident, but it's possible that the flight attendant didn't understand the woman because I don't think English was the woman's first language. Hmm. I think it's possible that she didn't understand her when she said there was a dog. There were a couple of other people around that said, yeah, we heard her say there was a dog in it. So I don't know why the flight attendant did that. You know, everybody was just beside themselves, not, you know, with the fact that this flight attendant put the carrier with the dog in it in the overhead bin. Okay. The dog apparently barked for 2 hours. In the overhead bin, okay? The dog eventually died and apparently died of suffocation. There's a couple of articles out there that, that I guess they determined that was the cause of death. And it was a little puppy. It was a French bulldog puppy, 8 months old. And, of course, everybody's blaming the flight attendant. Everybody's blaming the airline. You know, nobody, you know, everybody's just like, how could they do that? How could they allow this? You know, just you know, like really, really angry about the whole thing. And yeah, I mean, I'm angry. I have a huge heart for animals, huge heart for dogs. Like I was appalled by it. Just the idea that a flight attendant would think that that was an okay thing to do in the first place. You know, I mean, that was my initial reaction. Like, why would that flight attendant, you know, insist on this? You know, knowing that there was a dog in it in this carrier. Again, like I'm kind of like beyond. You know, being certain that the flight attendant knew that there was actually a dog in this carrier to thinking it's possible that she didn't know. I mean, I guess, it, you know, that is entirely possible. She claimed she didn't know. She claimed she did not know there was a dog. But here's my biggest beef with the whole thing. People on that plane sitting around where the woman and her kids and the dog and the overhead bin were sitting – all these people heard this poor puppy barking for 2 hours. Not a single person stood up and did anything about it. No one. People, I mean, and here's my thought about it, is that people are looking at, you know, okay, this flight attendant and the airline and this whole, you know, like the whole, I guess, just the atmosphere and the environment around flying. It's like these people are in authority. And I must obey authority. I must not break the rules, no matter what. And I think that like during this flight, there was some turbulence and people were told not to leave their seats and blah, blah, blah. You know, that was an excuse that one or two people made as to why they didn't get up and take the puppy out of the overhead bin. But I don't know. It's like, what kind of a human are you? That you would sit there and listen to this, being afraid to break rules, being afraid to go against what the flight attendant in her like funny outfit with her shiny badge insists that you do, you know, being afraid to go against that to save an innocent creature. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you that you're shifting responsibility from yourself
to this flight attendant
and this airline? You know, I mean, I'm saying, you know, I'm like a little on my soapbox here. I'm talking to all you people, you know, don't shift responsibility. Take responsibility. If you see something wrong, regardless of whether it means you're breaking the rules or not, do something about it. Do the right thing. These people did not do the right thing. And then they got off that plane and started pointing fingers at everyone else.
Well, yeah, I mean. I remember this story just because, I mean, usually anytime something happens to an animal, that story usually sticks with me, of course, because of my history with animals.
The poor thing, it barked for 2 hours and then it suffocated to death.
It's just,
and people let that happen.
But I agree. It's definitely messed up. But like, when I remember hearing about this, and I didn't look into it enough. I just remember being angry that a dog died that way. But I didn't look into it enough to see anything about, you know, who the owner was and stuff. And you're talking about the possible mm-hmm. language barrier and stuff. Because my initial reaction was, why aren't people mad at the owner? Why did the owner agree to this? Why did the owner say, are you insane? If this is what we're going to do, then no. Oh. My dog's either staying here or you're kicking me off the plane. Like, uh-huh. as you were explaining it just now, like, if there was somebody who English isn't their first language, and you know, if they're also, you know, nervous for what, you know, whatever reason,
people are afraid, and they're confused, and they question,
you know, usually, because unfortunately the reality is, I mean, again, I don't know who this person was, but minorities and immigrants seem to be a lot more susceptible to the at risk to you know, beat downs from people in authority. So mm-hmm. I can understand why anybody like that would be a little more hesitant to question this stuff. As far as the other people around them, I mean, mm-hmm. again, like, my first thought was, okay, I mean, yeah, if I was in that situation, I would, you know, probably just stand up and say, F you, everybody, I'm taking the dog down. But that's just, you know, not everybody is as brazen as me, obviously. But I think that a lot of people, you know, their first inclination could be, well, okay, this may be messed up. I don't know if I should say anything. But the owner's going along with it, so maybe it's okay. Like, I could see people's thinking like that too. But to immediately jump off, like, once the dog is found out that it's dead, and then all, you know, the media is there, then to get off that plane and everybody start pointing fingers like that, yeah,
of course.
Like, I'll cut you a break in the for not saying anything in the moment, because I could, like I said, I could see that. I could see people's reactions.
Oh, I mean, I'm not
that.
Saying I don't understand it. I'm not saying I don't like get that. Like, I understand that fear of, like, not, you know, of, you know, getting in trouble, you know, being handcuffed when I got off the plane because I broke some stupid arbitrary rule. I know that some of the rules.
You don't have to wait.
I'm sorry.
You're off the plane. You don't even have to wait to get off the plane these days. Most flights have some. Usually have an air marshal stashed away somewhere.
So
you don't even have to wait to get off the plane.
I'm just saying it's even worse. I can see that. Like, I'm not saying I don't understand it. I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, don't point fingers at other people when you were sitting there and you heard the poor dog. And of course you were appalled that happened. You know, of course you were, like, saddened and just, you know, you couldn't believe that this poor dog died in an overhead bin. But what were you doing though? Like, I mean, like, why didn't you act? You know, that's my whole point. It's like, I mean, to some degree I can understand, like, especially if the owner was an immigrant, whatever, legal or illegal, there's some fear against going against authority because, like, of the consequences of that. But yeah, like, there were other people around, and, you know, I read, like, you know, there was one person in particular that went on and on about it. And I'm like, well, why didn't you do anything? You know, this was a person, the steward said so. And they knew what was going on.
You asked the question. I said, well, because the steward has said so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, she's an authority figure. I mean, not to me, but I mean to a lot of people, that she represents some sort of authority.
Well,
recognize that authority.
That's kind of a tough one though, because, you know, for the most, even though the FAA, they control all that stuff. You know, the government, it's still like, these are private, you know, private companies. So I don't, you know, when it comes to, like, the authority thing, I don't know if I necessarily put it that far. I just think it's more so a lot of them tend to just follow policy, and the policies can be just as bad as government, because there are a lot of one size fits all things that don't take a lot of things into consideration, like, you know, a dog. Now, unfortunately, like, I mean, they usually have size rules for all those cages or whatever. And I mean, I don't know. I obviously wasn't there. You know, like you said, you don't really know what went down. How it actually went down. You just know how it's being reported, how it went down. Mm-hmm. And since everybody.
Well, I mean, but if it went down the way that it was reported that it went down, I'm just kind of like, why didn't you do anything? I mean, I still come to that conclusion.
Well, again, I think I think part of it's the conditioning. And
of course,
I don't necessarily like I don't necessarily equate it to the authority thing. It's just more so, oh, this, you know, that's the way, you know, it's the way it's supposed to be just because that's the rules of this place. And
it's the conditioning. I think people are conditioned to see, in particular now since 9/11, I think people are conditioned to see, you know, like any kind of airline employees as being authority. I mean, because they wear uniforms and they wear badges and all this other thing, all this other stuff. I do think people are conditioned to see them as authority figures.
I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I actually don't know about that because I was never a big, not that I was like afraid of flying or anything, but I just never really I didn't fly much to begin with. And then since 9/11, I've obviously not liked to fly, not really. I prefer to drive if at all possible. You know, I've taken multiple trips to places like even Florida from here that I've like, I'd rather drive. You know, I only fly if I have to, you know, like when I went to go run in the San Diego half marathon a few years back, it was like, can I drive there? It's like, well, no, man, the race is like in a few days and, you know, you got to be here and you got to sleep the night before and you'd have to drive straight through and it would still take you a few days. And yeah, it's not going to work. It's like, you have to get on a plane. Oh, all right, fine. You know, it's like those situations. All right, fine. I'll get on a plane because I don't want to deal with that stuff. I never even concerned myself with the stewardesses or anything like that. I'm more worried about having to deal with the TSA. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, heck, I threw a conniption fit when a couple of years back when things between Jen and I weren't so rosy, and her parents, I know they wanted to do it for the kids, but I think I'm pretty sure at least her dad definitely wanted to do it partially to spite me, but wanted to take them, all of a sudden decided they were going to take them and their older cousin to Disney World together, you know, for the first time. So of course they get to take my kids there. which is, you know, definitely a slap in my face. But I was like freaked out. Like, I don't want my kids going through, like, I, you know, because I've watched videos of kids being harassed by the TSA.
Yeah.
And it's usually kids with some type of a disability or one another or some type of behavioral issue. And unfortunately, you know, one of my daughters has some of her issues, and with that, she has a pretty nasty temper. So she, because she's my daughter, and you know, I was like freaked out. Like everybody thought I was being paranoid, being ridiculous. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm like, they could just pull her aside for whatever reason, and you know, they're completely because of the laws of the land, they're completely justified doing certain things to her and reacting in certain ways, despite the fact that she's a child who clearly doesn't grasp what's actually going on, and all she thinks is somebody's trying to touch her or do whatever. You know, like. You know, like, because most kids her age, they're told, you know, don't let anybody else touch these certain things, you know, only mommy, daddy, when they need to help you, or doctors, you know, that type of deal.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
You know, and then all of a sudden this person you don't know is like trying to stick their hand somewhere. It's like, yeah, of course kids are gonna freak out, you know.
Yeah.
And I like, there are some pretty messed up videos of these things happening to younger kids. And, you know, again, most people react and go, oh, you're just being paranoid, because they've been conditioned to think, oh, this is just normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, because
it's for your safety.
Well, and it's not, I mean,
you should be willing to do it because it's for your safety.
Well, yeah, because even the people who may not have been thrilled with it, there's a lot of people who have just at this point just accepted it, Because we're now at what? It's 2018, so it's now been almost, because what, we're at May, so it's almost 17 years then. You know, we're coming close to coming close to another anniversary.
That's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, well, on a lot of levels, yes, but what? Yeah. But particularly, we're now at a point where there's like an entire generation who has grown up knowing nothing but this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their first flights are all going to be, you know, so many people's first flights, like even the generation before that, a lot of their first flights were in this setting already, you know, because they didn't go on a flight until they were a little, you know, it's like in their teens or something. And they're already, oh, this is just the way it is. And that's how they've grown up. And that's and you're just conditioned, whether you think it's over the top or not. So many people, unfortunately, as I've lamented before, are more apathetic than anything else to what goes on, because they're just like, oh, this is bad. I don't like this, but it's been like this for a while. I don't think it could change. Ah, whatever. This is just the way it is. I'll grumble about it.
The learned helplessness.
Yep. And I'll grumble about it from time to time. And then instead, you know, and then, you know, but what can I do? I know that well, because I used to be one of those people. But yeah, that's really why I try to avoid flying at all costs. It's just that I mean, there's a lot of things that I having to deal with government on a, you know, daily, even just a semi regular basis, can be quite tiresome, frustrating, loathsome. a lot of adjectives and stuff and stuff I could think of and throw in here, but and not pleasant that. Whatchamacallit, you know, it's not like it's bad all the time, but it seems to be even worse in that situation. And it's just one of those things that grinds my gears even more and kind of triggers me even more. So I really do try to avoid it. And I would like my kids to avoid it, which, of course, I understand limits my possibilities as far as travel and seeing other places. But I hope one day they'll stop this silliness. And then maybe we can go back to, like, you know, like the good old days when
Stewart. Yes, we.
Me and the mouse. Me and the squirrel.
Maybe we can go back.
me and the squirrel in my trousers. Actually, me and Murder Dog. Because Murder Dog, I was looking around. Murder Dog actually is in the room. I forgot. I was trying to figure out if I. I have to ask her all the time. Like, she gets, sometimes she doesn't want to go off the couch and come in, but other times she like comes running to, like, before I shut the door to the studio, she wants to come in here. Studio. I just realized I'm like looking around. I'm like, oh, as much as I'm going to be happy to get out of here, I'm going to miss having a studio for a little while. I'm going to have to be recording out of my car for the conceivable future. Not going to be the same, but anyway, yeah, so I really do. It's a hope that we can go. The collective, the royal we, can go back. Maybe we can go back to a time like, you know, the good time, like the 70s, when stewardesses were like, you know, the butt of jokes and movies and stuff like that.
And actually have good food.
Yeah. See, I don't remember that. I didn't take my.
I don't really remember that either. I remember, like,
I hear the story.
International flights, the food tends to be decent, actually. Like, edible. I'll totally eat it.
The only international flight. I've only ever been to, what is it, the Bahamas. Yeah, I've been to the Bahamas twice. Nassau. Not even the other one. What is it? Freeport was the other one, yeah. only the one island twice. It's the only time I've ever been international, so I wouldn't really know. Because they don't even get, they don't give you much on that flight. Because it's, you know, it's just a hop from Miami, so.
Yeah, I guess it tends to be a little bit longer flights. A little bit longer.
Yeah, if you're going to Europe, like, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like my dad, apparently. I just found out my dad's headed out to some Italian, Mediterranean type Adriatic. What is it? The Adriatic Sea? Is that, whatever.
Adriatic?
Adriatic. Thank you. I couldn't. It was spaced out on the name. Yes. He's doing that whole thing on a cruise, apparently. And I'm like, really, Pop? That's interesting. Yeah. Apparently, he's got some sugar mama who's like in love with him that he's just kind of like, fine.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, my dad's doing all right. You know, I love my poppies.
You go, Dad.
Same guy. I mean, he's been married. God, how many times has he been married now? I guess, did he give up after three? Yeah, because I think it was the whole thing. Like we were growing up, we found out like somewhere around, I think it was around the time I was around like 10 or 12, like we found out my dad had actually been married before, you know, before my mom. And like, that was a big thing. I was like, ooh. And then he got, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he married the bodybuilder afterwards. That was a weird thing. That was the one we found out. That was the, yeah, we found out after the fact that my dad had got married. This is before my dad and I started getting along really well again. Yeah. And found our bond over freedom all these years later. But yeah, I got it. My sisters and I got an email from him. You know, this was years ago, just being like, hey, so we're having a party at your grandmother's husband, because like my grandmother had remarried after my grandfather died too, which another thing I didn't really even know about just kind of happened. And I was like, all right. But he was like, yeah, we're having this party. It's kind of, it's not an engagement party. It's kind of like, well, it's an after wedding party. And we're like, what do you mean an after wedding party? It's like, well, I got married. It's like, wait, what? Like, that's how he told us. Like, he just decided to get married down in Bermuda or somewhere, Bahamas, wherever, one of the islands down there. Huh. I don't even remember where. But yeah, he like met some like body, like, and when I say bodybuilder, like some woman who had actually, like, she was in all those magazines, like the bodybuilding magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. she's like the weirdest thing. But yeah. He just like, you know, but after that, he's just like, yeah, not doing the, I decided marriage is not for me. It's like, oh, it only took you three tries. That's pretty good. Some guys take more. but yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, I think it's overrated.
I've
only done it the once.
I've never actually been married. I mean, I consider myself married at this point. I mean, Jen and I have been together now, whatever married actually means, I guess, because whatever your definition of that is, because even though we did take a break, I mean, we started together over 8 years ago, I think, at this point, so, you know.
Yeah.
And I said for a long time I was against the institution of it. I don't even necessarily know if that's true. I don't like government-approved marriages. I think those are silly.
Right, yeah.
So my dad gave up on those, and then you know, he's just been living the life out in Vegas for years, and apparently, according to lots of women, I mean, I've heard this all my life. My dad's a good looking guy, you know. Apparently, even now, what is he now? Gosh, well, let's see. If I'm 41, that means gosh, he's gonna be 71 this year. Yeah, old man.
wow.
But you know, and he's finally gone silver because he kept his he didn't go gray until like I think almost 50 maybe, wow, or maybe even later,
yeah.
which I guess bodes well for me. Or isn't that doesn't the hair, or supposedly the hair genes come from the mom side of the family? Do I have that right? Do I remember that correctly?
Well, I think balding does. Well, balding does. Like if you like male pattern baldness comes from.
I knew that, but I thought it was all. I thought it was most of the hair genes. I didn't know if it was. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Interesting. I guess maybe I just conflated the two. I just assumed the fact that it was all hair genes, because I had heard that. Yeah. I've heard that for years too, because I was mm-hmm. when I was younger, and you know, like people would get into silly fights and stuff, and people would try to, like, whether my friends or other family members would, like, try to pick on each other. It's like, and so, say something about me losing my hair. It's like, no, you know, look at my dad and everybody. It's like, no, you know, comes from mom's side. It's like, look at Uncle Hank. It's like, oh, you got me. It's wrong, man. It's wrong.
Well, I mean, if you were gonna lose your hair, I think you would have already started by now.
I'm not. I'm 41 now. I'm not really super worried about. I keep my hair cut down for the most part. I mean, aside from the pictures of me from last year when it was all wild and crazy, right before my arrest.
Yeah.
That had just been because I hadn't got a haircut in a while. But normally I do go get buzzed. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can afford it, I prefer to do it every 2 to 3 weeks. But I usually do it every 2 months at this point. No, that's not true. I usually do it once a month because I have court, because I have to go clean myself up for court. But I keep it cropped very close anyway, because I just, not because I like the look necessarily, just because I'm really too lazy to deal with it. I've gone through periods of my life where I've actually dealt with my hair and cared about my hair.
Yeah.
I no longer, I mean, please, back in the day, and I was actually reminded of this recently too, with packing up all the stuff that I have here that I had forgotten about, like old pictures and stuff. Back in the day when I was actually platinum blonde. first as a child, because I was like that up until I was five, I had platinum blonde curly hair. And then all of a sudden, like the next year, just like all of a sudden straightened out and turned like this mousy brown color. And then it was just like night and day. And then later on in life, by choice, kind of, I dyed my hair platinum blonde. That was a,
by choice, kind of, or
I wanted,
by choice?
I'm looking at, I got to look at the clock. We have a little bit of time. Okay. I wanted to dye my hair back when I was like 16 or 17 or 16, I think. And I was still at home and whatever. And my mom was like, I don't know about that. And I said, I wanted to dye my hair half blue, half purple. And she said, yeah, I know about that. You're not doing that. and the compromise was I was allowed to dye my hair if my mom, if we could agree on the color. And kind of, this was kind of like foreshadowing for a couple of years later when I got my first tattoo from a girlfriend who said she would pay for it. And then everything I picked out, she said no to. And finally, I just said, fine, I don't even care. Just pick something. And that's how I ended up with Pepe, my little gecko on my leg. Because I really don't care. So this was actually foreshadowing for that because it was kind of the same thing with my mom. After a while, I was like, fine, I don't even care. You just pick it. So she went with blonde and it ended up turning like platinum blonde. Which looked fine at the time until my hair started to grow back in. And like, there's pictures of me with the crazy, like half, like the roots coming in, like not just the roots coming in, like halfway grown back in. So it looked like I was trying to have frosted tips.
Oh my goodness.
Which was so not the intent, but yeah. Good times. Which is fine. We come full circle now. We're talking about mothers, which is funny. I usually don't talk about mine that much because we don't get along. And one of the, which isn't even the reason that I don't like this holiday, by the way, because I mentioned that earlier. But no, I think we've talked about it enough on the show. I don't like any holiday.
Yeah, I mean they're pretty much made up. So.
Well, of course they're all made up, but.
Yeah. I mean they're made up. I don't know, for consumerism stuff. I think, but I didn't get anything. Oh, I mean, I got greetings, and which is cool.
Greetings
but,
and salutations. Yeah. Or just
oh no,
greetings?
I take it back. You know what I got for Mother's Day? I got ear protection.
Awesome. See,
yeah.
See, practical gifts I love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I got from Dave. Dave got me, yeah, ear protection. So, oh, and I got a pedicure. You pay for that, so yay. Oh,
that's always nice.
Yay. So sometimes yeah, it was a pretty good day. I woke up too early, but
well, that's
whatever.
Not good.
Yeah. And I wanted to take a nap before the show, and which is crazy considering how early.
Well, for you,
we're
yeah.
doing it, but for me, well, not so much for you, but you know,
it's still relatively early for me. It's definitely much earlier than we used to do these shows.
Yeah. I was going to take a nap and I didn't. So I will be going to bed at a decent hour tonight again.
A decent hour.
Which is fine. Yeah. Oh, and you know, sleep is really important for health.
It is very really important to health. I actually heard, let's see, what we got. Probably got like 5 minutes left or so. There's a recent Joe Rogan podcast with this guy, this sleep doctor guy, Mark Walker, maybe his name is. I forgot. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I'll try to remember to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll try to remember.
I really enjoy most of his podcasts, Joe Rogan's.
I've always been a Rogan fan. I've been a fan. Mm-hmm. I stumbled across him when he started doing news radio way back in the day. I know he was doing stand up before that, and he'd become somewhat popular. But I didn't know him.
Yeah,
from
and
that.
He's really funny.
He is.
I couldn't believe it.
But I mean,
I'd never heard any of his stand up, and I heard one, and I was like, wow, he's funny. But anyway, go ahead.
His early stuff is extremely raunchy and funny, and his later stuff is a lot more sophisticated. I mean, it's still raunchy. It's like, but he's actually got, he's pretty sophisticated about it, and he's funny. But yeah, I do love listening to him. Although he does, you know, most of his podcasts are 3 hours, and sometimes he does two of them in a day, and he has a lot of MMA fighters on, which I've never really had much. I mean, I'll watch UFC every once in a while, but I've never really had like a super interest in it, so I definitely don't really care to listen to.
There's only certain people that I'm really interested in hearing.
Yeah,
that come on his show, well, but he has definitely not like so much the MMA.
Oh yeah,
people,
yeah. Well, he has doctors, scientists, you know, psychiatrists, like all and like a whole like all those people. I'm like, I usually try to listen to, and yeah, this one, this sleep doctor guy, it was like the stuff he was talking about. I'll definitely try to put it in the show notes, but it was just amazing. Like the fact that you know, according to all these studies that he and a bunch of people have been doing for years, like 7 hours is like the minimum you really are supposed, like you, it's not just about you feeling tired and worn out or whatever.
Right.
Like the stuff they've found, like how damaging you, how much damage you're doing to your body by running on less sleep than that.
Absolutely.
Is insane.
Yeah.
And like you hear about some of these things. I've known about some of these things over the years, but like to the extent this guy was talking about it, and like, you know, they've got a lot of research to back this stuff up, it was mind blowing. Like even Rogan was like, oh my God. Like the whole time he's like, you're just totally blowing my mind.
Yeah, probably. I mean, not the least of which, obesity for sure. Lack of sleep contributes to that. Yep. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear. I mean, I haven't heard the podcast, but I wouldn't be surprised to hear of like cognitive disorders and and stress, obviously, and
runs the gamut.
I mean, it probably turns into like a negative feedback loop.
Yeah, essentially.
When, the lack of sleep. You know, more stress, lack of sleep.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. So definitely. I like I said, I've been going to sleep earlier. I mean, I still go to sleep a lot. I still go to sleep after midnight, but I can afford to sleep a little later because the girls aren't here and stuff.
Right.
And they're not even getting dressed and ready over, at the apartment yet. So I don't have to worry about them getting here. So I have that advantage at the present moment. That's going to change soon when I'm living out of my car, but that's a whole nother story that we don't have time for right now. Cause we're probably going to get wrapping up, but this has been a lot of fun. It's been so good to have you back, Diana. I've missed talking to you.
I want to come back more often for sure. Like definitely. make up for some time.
Definitely. Yeah. It's
definitely.
Good to have you back. But like I said, it's been forever and we finally got this done. So
I know. And I'm really sorry. I kept putting you off, but
I really was very sick.
And I'm sitting here. I'm kind of astonished that my voice hasn't gone. Wow. So I must really be better.
Perfect. Well, on that note, I think we gotta close out. So thank you everybody for listening.
Okay.
For more of us.
Yeah, worms.
Yeah, for more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Worms. Meow.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Vanat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.